Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Because I don't know for a fact, but I can almost guarantee that there are other near-peer competitors out there that are experimenting with stuff like this. You know, if Eastern Bloc Germany was impregnating powerlifters and giving them abortions in order to increase females' levels of testosterone in their bodies to compete at a higher level at the Olympics, I don't know. Wouldn't you think that there's certain unsavory characters out there that are experimenting with all sorts of cognitive enhancers right now?
You're listening to War College, a weekly podcast that brings you the stories from behind the front lines. Here are your hosts.
Hello, welcome to War College. I'm Matthew Gault.
And I'm Derek Gannon.
Drugs and war go together like peanut butter and jelly. American soldier boys smoked the reefer in Vietnam, the Wehrmacht ran on amphetamine, and Viking berserkers were probably on something. Soldiers have enhanced and altered perception using chemicals for centuries, but in the annals of getting fucked up and going to war, you don't hear a lot about psychedelics such as LSD and MDMA. That might be changing. With us today is Marine Corps Officer Imre Albayrak. Albayrak is an expeditionary ground reconnaissance officer and has served as an intelligence officer for 12 years. He's also the author of an interesting article in the February issue of Marine Corps Gazette, a professional journal published by the Marine Corps Association. It's titled Microdosing: Improving Performance Enhancements in Intelligence Analysis. It suggests, very basically, that military intelligence operations could get a boost if Marines dropped a little acid. Major Albayrak, thank you so much for joining us.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So I just want to state up at the top that what we're going to be talking about today and the views that are going to be expressed are your own. They do not represent official policy or opinion of the Pentagon or U.S. Marine Corps. And I also want to say that our producer, Kevin Nodell, brought us this story and did a lot of the original reporting on it for the Daily Beast. So let's get some basics out of the way, because I think most people hear LSD and there's, you know, some immediate connotations that come up. But microdosing is different. What exactly is microdosing?
So when I talk about microdosing in the article, and I highlight this, it's a sub-perceptible dose that's given. So essentially, you know, the walls aren't melting. You're not seeing dinosaurs and monsters, and you're not entering into another dimension. It's a sub-perceptible dose that gives you a sort of a boost, almost as if, you know, when you drink your coffee in the morning, you get a little bit of a boost from that. And some people would say that they feel normal, or they don't feel normal until they have that morning coffee. The microdosing is basically on the same level with psychedelics and doesn't necessarily have to be LSD. It could also be psilocybin as well. And again, all of this is just based on the research and the reading that I've done. I have no firsthand experience with psychedelics.
Okay, so it doesn't per se get you high in any way, or at least that's not what the literature says.
Correct. The literature and, you know, the people that do have extensive experience with psychedelics, and the anecdotal evidence is that microdosing does not cause any perceptible change that you would think that, you know, it's not causing sensory changes, like visual hallucinations, and it's not strong enough to debilitate the subject.
Okay, well then what are the benefits? Why would you do this?
So, based on some of the research that I've done, which is highlighted in the article, and some of the research that's been done by the Imperial College in London, by Robin Carhart-Harris, who's one of the leading researchers in the field of psychedelics right now. The subperceptible or the micro dose still gives you heightened alertness, creativity, and helps with problem-solving skills that induces a flow-like state basically in the mind that aids in the lateral thinking that you would need for things such as complex problems, which, you know, intelligence analysts are dealing with almost on a daily basis.
Now, tell us what flow is a psychological term, right? It has a very specific definition. What is that?
Correct. So the flow state, and I guess I should kind of go back as to give the background history on how I even got myself into writing this article. And it all goes back to a friend of mine who is a former Marine helicopter pilot. He's now out of the Marine Corps, suggested that I read a book called Stealing Fire by Stephen Kotler. And when I began reading the book, Kotler talks a lot about ecstasis and flow and this heightened alertness, this heightened state of thinking and being that you can achieve and that people have been pursuing for years to achieve, whether it's, you know, what people might call maybe some adrenaline junkies doing high stakes sports such as base jumping, cliff diving, you know, big mountain skiing, some of that stuff that creates this type of whole body experience where things are happening and you know they're happening, but you're not necessarily thinking about the things that are happening. You're just reacting. You're therefore in the flow.
It's a meditative state almost, right?
Exactly. As a matter of fact, flow has also been exhibited in Zen masters that have tens of thousands of hours of dedicated meditation time, guided meditation time, people that are really able to slow down the default mode network of their brain, to slow down the chatter, and to really enter this state of being that, you know, a lot of people describe it as being one with themselves, or, you know, those of us that have done yoga, you know, you start chanting Om, and it kind of gives you this nice warm feeling of being one with yourself, being one with the people around you, just this very deep sense of being.
And I'm wondering what the benefits of that are to intelligence work.
Right. So the benefits of that to intelligence work, intelligence analysts are usually dealing with problems that are created by other human beings. Problems can be varied. Problems can be of different sizes and scopes. But there's this great quote by Albert Einstein, and I use that in kind of the opening of the article, that no problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it. The analysts that are working on problems and issues, they really do need to be in a flow state. They really do need to be on another level of consciousness when they're engaging with whatever it is that they're doing. And some really good analysts can do this. They can really put themselves in their work. They can really calm down everything else that's going on in the back of their minds. And this is not just with intelligence analysts. You know, I think this applies to everybody across a wide spectrum of jobs, whether in the military or not. But you can really concentrate and you can really dive down and drive down deep into the heart of the problem and try to fix the issues or these wicked problems from a level that you necessarily consciously are not at. Now, what I'm positing in this article is that through the use of microdosing, we can get other analysts that are, you know, still just as smart, still just as capable, but get them to this level of flow without the thousands of hours of meditation that these yoga and Zen masters have to be able to get into flow, or the thousands of reps that professional athletes have when they get into their flow, like Olympic level athletes, that they can just kind of turn that flow on and turn it off. My suggestion is that by utilizing LSD, by increasing certain connections in the brain, by heightening the alertness, the creativity, and the problem-solving portions of the brain, and inducing this flow state that's going to aid in lateral thinking, analysts would be able to connect, you know, something that might seemingly be unconnected when you're looking at it from one level of consciousness. You can all of a sudden start making the connections and solving the problems that seemed extremely difficult or maybe even unsolvable.
Have you yourself ever experienced a flow state, obviously unaided by chemicals?
Sure. I think that at some point, all of us experience a flow state. If we do something for long enough, you know, I mentioned in my article that you'll see seasoned CQB teams, so close quarter battle teams, that are clearing rooms and buildings after doing so many hundreds of reps of clearing a room. They achieve a flow state. They achieve group flow. And Stephen Kotler talks about this in his book as well, of how certain teams can achieve group flow as well. And that I have experienced that, whether it was with shooting where you're just letting the body take over, part of the mind take over that wouldn't necessarily be taking over. And all of a sudden the target seems like you can't miss it. And experienced it with skydiving and military free fall. You achieve a certain level of flow. I think maybe more so there, the danger and the fact that your mind knows that everything in that act is do or die. I think it forces you into a type of flow state. And I also think that it's why in high adrenaline sports, you tend to see athletes in more of a flow state or in ecstasis. And there's another book about that as well called The Rise of Superman, subtitled Decoding the Science of Ultimate Human Performance. And Stephen Kotler talks about, you know, wingsuit base jumping and athletes that have done this. You know, there's extensive interviews with Dean Potter, who unfortunately passed away, wingsuit base jumping, but just to kind of get into the mindset and explore how these athletes enter flow in a non-chemical way.
I think I've experienced the flow before. I was in a CQB team in a SIF team, and we used to practice over and over again, blowing doors, going into rooms, clearing as many times. We used to call it free flowing, so much so that you could actually not become tunnel visioned, but you could almost sense your number two and three man that you always work with around the room and know that he's not going to shoot. Like you just could feel like you could shoot and everything was going to be okay. So I guess that's what you're kind of talking about, flow state. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. And that's, so you're essentially seeing things before they happen.
Yeah, exactly. Even pieing a corner, you just get that, what, 30% low percentage look into a room, you feel like, okay, I know the rest of the room. Let's just go.
Yeah, at that point, you know, there's probably, and again, it's very hard to do brain imaging on a CQB team as they're doing, you know, as they're clearing. But I would say that there is probably a decreased level of default mode network of the brain that's happening, which is allowing you to get into that flow state, which, you know, once you start moving, you're flowing like water through a building.
Yeah, free, that's what we called it, free flow. It just felt like you were flowing through every, like nothing could stop you, even couches or chairs. It just, everything kind of moved out of the way. It was kind of interesting. Although we did use a lot of what you call PEDs, personal enhancement drugs, such as like Monsters, Copenhagen.
I'm pretty sure Monster is kept alive by the U.S. military.
I'm pretty sure it is too. But there's a, but I feel like there's an, as a medic, I feel like there's an issue with these specific things that seem to be the big three, which is, you know, caffeine, pre-workout, nicotine, and that's you talked about it in your article with the Marine Times there about rhabdomyolysis, dehydration, and that's these guys are using this now. So the offset for that is what? Like, how do we monitor that besides having someone get an IV?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like you said, the supplement use is rabid across conventional units, across soft units. And these all have certain shown positive short-term effects, right? However, they have not been shown to significantly elevate cognitive activity or enhance neural pathways or disrupt the brain's default mode network. And that, I think, is the biggest difference here between conventional PEDs that are in use right now and what I'm suggesting with the microdosing of psychedelics, whether that be psilocybin or LSD.
You keep name checking something I think some psychonauts may know, but the rest of the public might not. What is the default mode network, and why is it important to get it kind of not chattering?
Right. So the default mode network of the brain is an area of the brain that's activated when the mind is wandering, not committed to a task, and you're thinking about your own emotional state. During a period of wakefulness, right? And it's what's generally viewed as the ego. And the research shows that a person's problem-solving ability is, you know, and again, this is partially my views as well, combined with the research, is that a person's problem-solving ability is typically constrained by his ability to think beyond his limited set of experiences. That are housed within that default mode network or within the ego. And the attempts to find solutions when you're searching for solutions to a problem, what do? We go and we look back at our past experiences and we try to find a piece of the puzzle that fits in to this space that we are seeing, right? So if I don't have that experience, or if the DMN, as we'll call it, as it's referred to, the default mode network of the brain, is not allowing you to find that solution or find that puzzle piece that needs to fit into a certain peg, you're going to have a high level of difficulty in attempting to solve any problem or issue or problem set that you may encounter. And again, a good way to, you know, kind of go back to other conventional military experiences. If you have been doing CQB, but let's say you haven't ever done you've been doing homes, urban houses, but you've never done for example, a gas and oil platform. You're going to try to find ways to turn that GoPlat, the gas and oil platform, into a house in your mind as you are going through it and trying to clear it, right? And mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys can kind of relate to that.
No, yeah, definitely. We did a ship one time, and that's not what we do. We try to turn it into a house. I completely agree with you. Also, you touched on the ego, and I'm glad that you said something about that. I feel, and this is just me in my hip pocket observation of special forces and special operations across the U.S. military as a whole. The guys and gals that go and do this, they seem to be on an ADD or ADHD kind of spectrum, right? They're hyper-focused in that job. They're very interested into it, so they dial it down. They dial it into the last of the nuts and bolts, right? That's at least what I think.
that's also kind of what we are bred to do, right? I mean, people always say, you know, lives are on the line. You are responsible for it. You need to have contingencies for your contingencies.
So the thing that I don't like about that, or what, and you wrote it in your article about it. You talked about Adderall, Ritalin, and Provigil. These three, and these are amphetamines. Let's just be honest. These things are synthetically created amphetamines. Am I wrong, or are they more safer than?
No, 100% agree. I think Provigil is on a different spectrum than Adderall.
It's
Adderall
the new GOAT.
Absolutely. Yep. Adderall is absolutely a amphetamine, and you know that, like you said, I talk about the high risk of addiction, the rhabdomyolysis, the kidney failure that comes along with abusing these drugs, or when you start mixing other things along with those drugs, because let's face it, Adderall probably wasn't made for the healthy 24 to 35 year old special operator that's doing all manner of physical things while at the same time probably having some fun on the weekends, you know, with alcohol and staying up late and doing other things that basically is burning the candle at both ends.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And let's be honest, you know that's what they're going to be doing. I'm not saying they're children, but you know that's what they're going to be doing. So let's switch off the operator for a second, because you know that if you give him a 30-day supply of Adderall, he's like, yeah, sure, I'm going to take one or two for the mission, and the weekend's going to be awesome. I'm not being an asshole right now, but there's one or two that are going to do that. Let's switch it to Intel analysis specifically target deck matriculation, where you've got to see in the matrix, is what we used to say, to kind of see a pattern of life, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, in your article, you talked about using LSD and psilocybin for that. Now, I've been out for a while. LSD, I've taken LSD. It's amazing. If you're in the right mindset, it's, you know, the remapping, the MDMA, PTSD, what have you. But talk to me how LSD could absolutely, and I'm going to use the words of the street, open up the third eye of some Intel analyst hunting for a tier one target. How is that? And it's non-addictive. So how is that? How is that going to be specifically like efficacious for that?
Yeah. So again, what my hope is, for, you know, and who knows, this, a study like this may already be in the works, and I just might not have the right clearances to know that this was going on, you know, and someone could be off in a corner laughing at me right now and saying, you know, hey, bud, you're late to the party. But what I would like to see to see if this actually would work, right? Because maybe it doesn't work. Maybe this is just a bunch of rah-rah, and all that's going to happen is the analysts that are exposed to an experiment like this are maybe going to get better, deeper insights into themselves, and it's not really going to open up the third eye for them to be able to put together a good target package or solve a complex organization's org chart or figure out who was responsible for certain things within an organization. But, and I'm not you know, not familiar, not being familiar with the type of experience you've had with psychedelics, but I would venture a guess to say that you were probably microdosing.
Yeah, yes, I was. I wasn't microdosing.
The majority of the comments that I've seen or the people that have kind of approached me, they always talk about their experiences with psychedelics, which I think from what I've read and what I've seen is it's a very personal experience, especially when macrodosing, people have very personal experiences with psychedelics. And some of those experiences are not always really great. And that's why they talk about in the literature that psychedelics aren't necessarily an addictive drug, because no one really wants to have those type of very personal, very deep experiences on a consistently recurring basis.
No, I didn't have a bad. I didn't have a bad trip. I'm not trying to steal the microdosing thing. I did macrodose. The thing is, what I did was I read a lot. Like a special forces medic, you're wearing the loincloth. You're looking at alternative medication and alternative, you know, way of treatments. And I've been out, so I wanted to experience what they called a mind remapping. Right. I wanted to remap my synapses.
Absolutely.
From this,
and you probably had the right setting.
I had the right setting. I didn't go into it. There was fear, obviously, because I mean, I've never done that before, and it's something that you hear all the horror stories of, like your face melting, whatever and what have you. But the setting was correct, and it was absolutely an experience. Like, I sound ultra hippie. I am from Portland, but you know, my parents are going to be super proud of hearing this later. But I did have an experience that was positive where other people haven't. And that's why I'm interested in microdosing, because if you can get that, I don't want to say alertness like caffeine, but just awareness and your ability to think out completely outside of the square.
Right. And I think what you're alluding to there is enhanced cognitive function.
Yes. Right?
So the other PEDs give us enhanced physical function, increased heart rate, pupil dilation, some of them, certain boosts of strength, et cetera. But the microdosing has been shown to enhance cognitive function, flexibility of the mind, the ability to, especially for a lot of us that are in this business, our egos are unmatched. And sometimes that gets in the way of our ability to problem solve and our ability to take a look from a different perspective, because sometimes, a lot of times, I believe, when you start looking at things from a different perspective, you can see that your original perspective was maybe wrong. And not a lot of us like to believe that we are wrong, because I think that causes ego degradation it hurts sometimes to have the type of lateral thinking, creativity, and elevated mood to be able to see that you are wrong. Because, again, you said you had a positive experience. I think maybe some of the experiences that people do have is they see that maybe the way that I've been doing things might not have been the best way for me or the best way for the mission, what have you. And sometimes that can cause a real cognitive dissonance between your ego and what's right.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was a good experience. I did challenge myself, like, you know, the old wives' tales of don't look at yourself in the mirror, you won't like what you see. So I did all of that. And I did have what they call a spotter, because I just wanted to make sure I was completely safe. And it was actually an amazing experience. And it's the same, like, you know, everyone goes down and does these ayahuasca tours to you know, do the remapping. I thought that was a little touch much to go down to Costa Rica to do that, but
and from what I read, ayahuasca is very physically painful.
I also read that, and I don't want to be in physical pain. I want to enjoy what's happening. I want to learn, but
everything costs, gentlemen. Everything costs.
Exactly, everything does have a cost.
How do you sell the brass in the public on something like this and avoid the specter of MKUltra? You know, famously, in case anyone in the audience doesn't know, CIA's literal LSD mind control experiments. You know, that's what people think of when they think of the government and psychedelics now.
Yeah, I think the some of the it was funny as this article kind of started going viral. Initially, the Marine Corps Times, not the Gazette where I was published, but the Marine Corps Times called it a study, which I was pretty proud of. I told my wife, now there's two doctors in the house. She thought that was pretty funny as well. And then, of course, the reactions on social media were men who stare at goats, MK Ultra, didn't we try this in Vietnam? Hasn't this guy seen Jacob's Ladder? And, you know, any other basically vilified perception of psychedelics that you can think of. And I think that that has been the biggest limiter to having these, well, other than the fact that LSD is a Schedule I drug, which means that the FDA sees that there is no prudent use for it, no clinical use, nothing that would be of use from this drug. I think those are the things that have really stood in the way of meaningful psychedelic research. But I do think that that's changing with researchers such as Robin Carhart-Harris. I think that now we're in this third renaissance of psychedelics, and even, you know, Fadiman is having a resurgence. I just recently saw that on PubMed he had published an article called Might Microdosing Psychedelics Be Safe and Beneficial in Initial Exploration? But the way to approach it, or the way that I would approach it, is by debunking some of the myths that are out there, you know, explaining exactly what happened with these old failed experiments of macrodosing. A lot of people also posted that video of the army utilizing psychedelics with a formation of soldiers and seeing what macrodosing would do to soldiers to see if they could either control soldiers or alter their minds. Well, it turned out just as they would expect. You know, the setting wasn't right. There were no spotters, so to speak of. They just gave these soldiers massive doses of psychedelics, sent them on their way without really telling them anything, and tried to make them do drill, which I don't even like to do drill when I'm completely sober. So I can only imagine what drill and psychedelics would be like.
Wow.
And then, you know, the MK Ultra experiments, again, done on unsuspecting, mostly, subjects. I think at the time at the CIA, people were closely guarding their coffee mugs because their peers would come by and just slip some LSD in your mug. And, you know, that bad case of the Mondays, that's a totally different, different way to have a bad case of the Mondays. But from the perspective of, you know, explaining it to, I guess if I had to kind of defend this like a thesis, or if I had to go and ask for money or for the resources from headquarters Marine Corps or the intelligence department to be able to turn this type of thing into a reality, you would, and everyone that I've come in contact with that has read my article from all different ranks, they've all been very interested in it. And they've all said that this is the type of divergent thinking that we need, because I do believe that there's a certain amount of stagnation right now that's happening with creative thinking within the military. But I would just explain to them this, what psychedelics really are, how they have been used, how they've been used in the past, and how they would be used in an experiment such as this. And I think that the military is a perfect incubator and a perfect petri dish for experiments like this. And what I mean by that is you have a healthy, intelligent, screened population that you can utilize that are already volunteers, and they can further volunteer for other studies. You can hand select, and you already know that they have a certain level of education or a certain level of experience. Additionally, we are screened, you know, physically all the time. Those of us that have been in the military or that are in the military know, you know, if you need your teeth cleaned, your chain of command is going to tell you about it. If you need to go get your flu shot, you're going to hear it from six different people if you're on a hit list. So we are pretty healthy population under constant or consistent, I would say, maybe not constant, but consistent medical care. So it's easy to do experiments like this because you essentially have not complete control, but as complete as control can get when it comes to experiments like this.
I completely agree, because what you're talking about is you got physically fit men and women who already volunteered once. And then there's also, like, what you I think you mentioned it in your article, special access programs. They can volunteer for these SAPs or SAP programs, special access programs, and be under the watchful eye of folks that are going to be monitoring this microdosing and everything else like that. But what I found interesting was that you think that this should be a, like, almost a double blind codependent with DARPA. Do you think DARPA should take the reins for this, or this should stay specifically in the five-sided puzzle palace?
I don't think that they're mutually exclusive. I think both could happen. I think DARPA has a lot of very intelligent individuals that works for it, and I think that it could be a co-study that could be done. And I only say that because they have a lot of resources, and they have a lot of money when it comes to stuff like this, but just experimentation in general. So I think that that's where you can kind of gain the advantage. And it definitely, you need to have a double blind. A friend of mine suggested to me when I was writing this article, well, you know, you need to have a third set with a placebo. And I kind of thought about that for a little bit, but then didn't necessarily agree with that, because I didn't want to complicate the study even further, because I think that might have, again, I think it just would have complicated things if you've got a quote placebo group, and you know, they're not, because they're gonna know after a while. My assumption is that they're not feeling any true effects of whatever it is that they're taking. But I think it's absolutely sufficient to have two groups, one microdosing, one not, closely monitored with additional drug tests as well, to make sure that they aren't using this study to maybe circumvent the DOD's drug policy and taking other drugs, because they're thinking, oh, well, you know what? I'm being given drugs, so I'm going to use this to go and experiment with other drugs, because I think that's very important to isolate microdosing in a clinical setting from other recreational drug use.
Well, the placebo is kind of, it's already happening. If you think about it, let's even look at the intelligence community. You already have groups of fusion cells that are compartmentalized. You might as well just give. And I don't know. I know that you're not trying to get money from the Marines right now, but if you were, I'd say put one group in with the microdosing and make two compartmentalized fusion cells work on the same problem set and see what happens.
Right. And I think that, you know, that would be great. But as I mentioned in the article, I would have something a little bit more controlled than a problem set, because what happens with problem sets is if you're working on real world problem sets or you're working on past problem sets, what can happen is you can have an analyst that has experience with that problem set, or somehow has seen something like that before, which could give one group over the other an unfair advantage, which could obviously tip the scales for one group over the other. Whereas I would rather have them doing something like playing a game of Go, which is an incredibly simple game to learn, but an incredibly difficult game to master, which is being used by Google as a benchmark for their AI. So I would, because the game tests lateral thinking, creativity, all the things that are important for good intelligence analysis, good cognitive work.
In a perfect world, let's say this goes, right? The military, it's 2025, the military is microdosing. What happens when you have a bunch of guys and gals getting out of the military, they're now veterans, and they want to microdose in the civilian world for X, Y, and Z issues or problems or anything? They're technically, and it's still a class one. So these veterans who have been using microdosing are now criminals. Like, forward think that for me. Give me a hypothesis. Like, what would that be? Decriminalization afterwards, or what?
You know, maybe. But then again, I think that the things that they're doing in the military, you would kind of be exempt under certain laws or under certain ways of looking at things. If you think about it, some of the things that we already do in the military, other people might see as being illegal. You know, we do go to other countries. We do kill other people. It's mm-hmm. all in the name of good and peace. And we follow orders. And it's not really up to us at the lower levels to decide whether, you know, as long as the order is legal and you're not violating any laws, whether that's the Geneva Convention or any other rules that we are bound to as an ethical military, I think that you can't necessarily hold service members responsible for things that were done under, you know, orders or under a, if you want to talk about the experiment, or under a program, which was deemed legal by the government itself. Mm-hmm. You know, but now if you're talking about now they are out and they want to continue to do these things, I mean, there's plenty of people out there that are microdosing. There are plenty of resources out there that people can research and find. Countless Reddit subreddits, countless forums. I mean, you know, MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Research. Right. And a lot of resources that people can go out there and find things about microdosing and psychedelics. And at that point, I think we're all big boys and girls. You can kind of make the decisions with your own life as to what you want to do moving forward. And I think that psychedelics are becoming a whole lot less taboo, just like other drugs, which are not, we're finding that they're not as demonic as they have been made in these, in the past years. We're finding that they're not quite as evil as we thought they were. And I think a lot of these views are going to continue to evolve and continue to change. And who knows, 15, 20 years down the line, some of the things, just like prohibition, right? I mean, alcohol was the devil. Mm-hmm. And we had a prohibition in this country. I always remind people of that. And now alcohol is probably the easiest drug to get a hold of in this country. And also something that causes the most harm, true, both to users and to others. So the world is a strange place, you know? but I will say that, and I mentioned this in my article as well, war is not fair. And if something gives us the advantage, whether that's physical or cognitive, I think that we need to take that advantage and run with it as far as we can before someone else catches up to us. Because I don't know for a fact, but I can almost guarantee that there are other near peer competitors out there that are experimenting with stuff like this. You know, if Eastern Bloc Germany was impregnating powerlifters and giving them abortions in order to increase females' levels of testosterone in their bodies to compete mm-hmm. at a higher level at the Olympics, I don't know. Wouldn't you think that there's certain unsavory characters out there that are experimenting with all sorts of cognitive enhancers right now? So, and, you know, I'm sure either both of you or some of you have read the book, and some of your listeners have probably read it too, a book by Norman Ohler by the name of Blitzed, Drugs in Nazi Germany, that essentially talks about Pervitin, which was an amphetamine, being the drug that fueled the German Blitzkrieg and that style of fighting. You know, our competitors are out there and they're looking for an edge. And I think if we find it before them, you know, war is not fair and we don't have to play fair. There's no World Anti-Doping Association, you know, doping officials waiting for me at the finish line at the end of a phase line, or after I clear a house, you know, asking me to urinate in a cup. Even in modern combat right now, you know, if you watch some of these documentaries or YouTube videos and stuff like that about what's going on right now in Syria and Iraq and with Daesh and ISIS. And those guys are, I mean, those guys are high. And again, it's not the type of cognitive enhancement that is beneficial in any long-term manner and not something that I would recommend for the U.S. military, but they're experimenting, you know, they're trying to see what works.
I can tell you for a fact that when I was in Iraq, and this was early in the war around the 08, 09, or even in the 03 time, that the Mahdi Army and AQI were very much into amphetamines. So much so that they would fight even after being hit a couple times. They would just keep coming at you. So the propaganda is these guys are true believers, and I definitely know the Islamic State is into it, dosing up high doses of amphetamines into their fighters too. And like, there you go, you've been blessed by Allah, now go crazy. But with that being said, the go crazy, you know, running amok type of thing, and you look at some of the reporting negative wise of steroid use in the Iraq and Afghanistan war and how that kind of does that. And I'm going to do, you know, these kind of road rage from U.S. troops kind of in combat zones committing, you know, kind of been linking to war crimes. You know, what happens, because it will happen. I'm not saying it's not going to. What happens when the U.S. goes too far with this?
You know, that's a great question. In hindsight, it's always 2020. And I don't think that right now I have the answer for something like that, because I don't know what too far looks like right now, especially with cognitive enhancers, which is kind of what I'm advocating for, you know. So because, again, my expertise is in the field of intelligence and I've spent time with reconnaissance units, but what I want is a smarter, more adaptive, more mentally lethal and cognitively flexible and creative intelligence analysts within the Marine Corps intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance enterprise that's going to allow us to get to the next level.
I guess you're right, because steroids, they enhance the fight syndrome instead of the fight or flight. They enhance that. It increases aggression, whereas what you kind of just explained it, you're looking at microdosing as a cognitive lethal, becoming cognitively lethal.
If you go too far, you're experiencing ego death. It's not the same thing.
Yeah,
exactly. I think it's pretty much the exact opposite of steroids, if you will, in a way. One of the things that has been brought up to me, again, by my friend, the former Marine helicopter pilot, he's very into psychedelics and researches a lot and very intelligent on it. He said, you know, one thing that I could see, he said, from this is what's going to happen when, and this might not happen with microdosing, but everyone reacts differently and it may happen. He said, what's going to happen when the cognitive abilities of these Marines or sailors or airmen or soldiers start to become so enhanced and expanded that they get a look inside of that total connectivity, you know, the psychedelics, the whole movement of the psychedelics being about love and peace and that we are all connected. And he said, what starts happening when, if they get a taste or a feel of that and they start to realize I'm using this as a war machine. And he says, is that going to cause them to step back from what they're doing and not want to do, you know, not want to, as I've mentioned it, said to a friend, you know, expand your mind, expand the targets. But if you expand your mind, what if you don't want to expand the targets? That's the one drawback that I could see.
I guess it would have to come down to the psychology of the individual. I think you're right. Let's take in 9/11, like the psychology of being attacked, that you would think that if you could microdose to expand, and we're going to talk about target decking, it would almost kind of break down to the morals and ethos of the individual operator or intel analyst or soldier or airman or Marine, right? It would break down to what he thinks. Okay.
Exactly. And of course, and I mentioned this in the article, you really have to, the research for the subject is just as important as the research itself. because you have to be able to not only have analysts that know what it is that they're doing and are very well versed in the basics of intelligence, right? Because it's not going to immediately make them the best intel analyst in the world, and they're not going to, you know, this isn't the limitless pill. That's what I want to kind of be clear out there. You're not going to take the pill and go to sleep on, you know, MCDP2 intel analysis and wake up and know everything that's in it. So you need to choose wisely there, and you also need to screen, because even though there are a lot of healthy individuals in the military, there's also a lot of individuals that have some issues, whether issues caused by early childhood or development, or issues caused by what they've seen in war, or what they've experienced in training, or what they've seen their friends go through. So you also need to make sure that there aren't any sort of sub-cognitive issues that may be also enhanced by cognitive enhancers.
I think that is the perfect note to go out on. Major, thank you so much for coming onto the show and telling us all about microdosing in the military.
Gentlemen, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, and I hope the message gets out far and wide, because really that's all I'm here for.
Thank you so much for listening. War College is me, Matthew Galt, Kevin O'Dell, and Derek Gannon. It was created by myself and Jason Fields, who doesn't want a party, please stop asking. Follow us on Twitter at @war_college and on Facebook at facebook.com/warcollegepodcast. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes and leave a comment. We will talk to you next week. Until then, stay safe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.